Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
All right, welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Got a busy show on the way today. Despite a big social media push, Tim Stützle will not be going to the All-Star game. It's an outrage. Pierre Dorion was at the LA Kings game on Thursday night. What's he up to? Matthew Joseph had tongues wagging this week. DJ Smith made him a healthy scratch in his first game back from a six-week layoff due to injury, and his brother was in town as well to take on the Sens. It is Steve Warren along with the coach, Greg Kennedy. Greg, how are you today?
Very good, Steven. It's an NFL playoff weekend. Mildly excited, but I bet you're pretty fired up. I know you're a much bigger football fan than I am.
Yes, I'll be on the couch, covered in chip crumbs, as I always am at NFL playoff time. We will talk a little bit about that later on in the program, but we have lots of Sens news to get to. And I think, and by the way, I love your t-shirt. You've got a white t-shirt with what looks like the Levi's crest. Anybody who's bought a pair of Levi's jeans would know what that crest looks like, but it's the letters are jumbled to read Elvis. I love it.
Isn't that a beauty? I love this.
Well, I love Levi's and I love Elvis, so yeah, that's all good stuff.
Same here, buddy. Same here.
Nice stuff. Let's get in. Matthew Joseph in the news this week in that DJ Smith made him a healthy scratch. I think we were all surprised by that. In our last episode, Greg, we talked about what it'll mean to have Josh Norris and Matthew Joseph back, how everybody's properly slotted in now. And all of a sudden, Joseph, and they wouldn't talk about the reason why. So everybody was speculating like crazy this week. And Joseph wasn't going to play. He was going to be a healthy scratch in his first game back on a night when he's going to take on his brother from Pittsburgh, who plays for the Penguins, Pierre Olivier. And it just had everybody going, what is happening here? Did DJ Smith really think that this guy's not part of his best 12 forwards right now, or has something happened? And as it turned out, something happened. And what was your reaction when you heard Joseph was scratched this week?
I thought it was rather obvious myself. I mean, the only reason you health bomb somebody is they're not playing well enough, or it's some form of a punishment, some form of discipline. I immediately figured, okay, the guy did something wrong, probably while he was off injured, you know, missed a curfew or goofed around or did something, and I figured that's what it was. It had to be for disciplinary reasons. He was a scratch. The problem here was, of course, that his brother's in town for the game. Apparently there were 20 or 25 family members
50.
In for the game. 50 family members in for the game. I gotta believe that they all knew. Joseph had to know it was coming, had to know he owed the coach a game, and the family probably knew too, which probably explains why you didn't hear a lot of whining. Like, I'm sure the media were trying to get a hold of his family, trying to find out how they felt about things, but you didn't hear any of that. So I'm sure they all knew it was coming and it was expected. And Joseph's reaction to it was, I know you're going to play the clip, and low key, he low keyed it as much as DJ Smith did.
Yeah. And I think absolutely. It was curious. He was supposed to play in the St. Louis game and at the practice that morning. DJ Smith, it looks like he's in, and then suddenly he wasn't in. And so maybe it happened in and around there even. Maybe there was two healthy scratches in there that we don't know about. But either way, I look at the nature of his injury. They announced 2 weeks he'd be out when it happened, and he was out almost six. And so that's all just other layers that make you start thinking about what happened here. And now to hear both DJ Smith and Matthew Joseph talk about it, it sounds like it was absolutely a rule break. A mistake was made. We don't know exactly what, but it doesn't sound like either man is too worried about it.
Yeah, obviously, I'm just going to, you know, talk to you about this once. I mean, this was an internal thing. Obviously, did a mistake, and, you know, I was ready to assume the consequences of it. And, like I said, this is on me, and it's my responsibility. And, I think I know I can be better, and I will.
How tough was it? I know your family and friends coming in the sibling matchup. So to miss that, how difficult was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's I assume the consequences of it. You know, I'm an adult. I can deal with this, and I think it's part of hockey, and it's part of life. And you know, I'm ready to move forward, and I'm excited to be back in the lineup.
How excited are you to get back in the lineup?
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Yeah, you have no idea. It's been pretty brutal to be a sideline like that, and you know, be on this seeing the guys battling every night and not being able to help the team. And, you know, that's at the end of the day, that's what I like to do. That's what I love to do. And I'm a passionate guy about playing hockey and the game. And for me, that's all that matters. And I'm really excited to get out there with the guys.
So there's Matthew Joseph talking about the incident. And on the one hand, I think to myself, with all his family and friends in town, his first opportunity to take on his brother in an NHL game, my thought was, well, it must have been a pretty serious rule break, but then he's only out for a game. Since it sounds like it wasn't, you know, he didn't go out and kill a guy. We know that, you know, it sounds like it wasn't that great a sin because he's back in the lineup, and we'll play DJ Smith's comments here in a moment. He doesn't sound that upset about it. If that's the case, if you're the coach, would you maybe have turned a blind eye on this one and given him a warning and let him play in that game?
Well, again, I don't know what the actual offense was. Like,
right.
We just simply do not know. You know, if it were such a thing like that with me, and I'm listening to this, and I know what happened, and I know what's coming up, maybe I might go to the leadership group of the team and say, you know, we have these rules. Everybody follows the rules. We know what they are, and the consequences are laid out. How do you guys feel if we, you know, postpone this one game suspension? I might put it to the players if it were that serious, you know, that big a deal, let's say, and maybe not as serious an offense as we might think it is, then yeah, I might go to the players. But if I believe, sorry, no, these are the rules, this was a big one, this is a big breach, again, not knowing what was done, then I would have stuck to my guns in that case.
Yeah, that's an unfair question when you think about it. Hey, can you assess this situation you know nothing about for me? But that's what we do, right? That's what we do. Yeah. Anyways, clearly DJ Smith, because that was my concern, that DJ Smith was regarding Matthew Joseph as a guy who's outside his top 12 forwards. Like, he's comfortably inside the top nine, comfortably. And I was worried that DJ Smith was making a misevaluation. This guy's coming back, but, you know, I'm pretty happy with my top 12 right now. That's not the case at all. That was my worry, because in the absence of knowing what was going on, and still don't truly know what's going on beyond there was a mistake made, DJ Smith knows exactly what he has in Matthew Joseph, and this is what he'd like to see from him moving forward.
We just want him to get back to where he was. You know, when he came here a year ago, he had lots of confidence and he was, you know, making plays. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you come in, you get a new contract, you come in, you try and do too much. And then, you know, he's been injured and dinged up. So we're going to try and get him going here. And we know that he certainly can help us be a better team. But also we got to help him get his confidence going. And we'll certainly do that.
After he was a healthy scratch, was there a particular message that you guys relayed to him or wanted to have relayed to him?
You know, what I'll say on that issue is, and it's kind of been blown out of proportion, but it was a non-hockey issue. And, you know, he sat his game, and we welcome back open arms. We need him. And he'll talk to you guys today. But I know that Joe can help us play. I know that he can play up and down the lineup, and he can help us in all situations. We need these guys back. We need Mott back. We need these guys. And, you know, like I said, we welcome him back.
So it sounds like we can move on. That's DJ Smith talking about Matthew Joseph and what he has in him as a player and the situation. The only thing I'll take issue with there with, Greg, is don't come at the media with it's been blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. You made your bed. You laid in it. When you throw that out there like that, you could have easily, it was the easiest thing in the world to just say he needs another couple of games. You clearly put it out there, and you know that you've thrown a match on the bonfire that is the sports media. So don't complain. When you put it out there, you put the information out the way you did, then it's on you, DJ. I'm sorry.
Well, I did think at one point that, okay, maybe you could have just waited till he was healthy and then said, no, this is going to be your game. We'll just tell people that you're not healthy yet.
Exactly. You could have done
that. But that's not the same thing. That's not a suspension. That's not a, you are healthy and ready and good to go, and you are not going to play. You know, there has to be a consequence. And I understand it from that standpoint. But I believe that what should have happened was, instead of just saying, hey, Joseph's a healthy scratch tonight, they should have said more at the time that it was announced, right? It just, at the first opportunity to talk about it, it should have been laid out right there and then. And instead, it lingered around the media percolating for a while before we got comment from both DJ and Matthew Joseph.
Yeah, that's how it should have been played. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, just what he said there could have been said 2 days ago, and we wouldn't have had this bonfire of speculation from the media, including you and me. Yeah. We'll take a time out of the program. So Matthew Joseph back in the lineup for the Ottawa Senators, as is Josh Norris. We'll get into his first game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, how that looked. And Pierre Dorion was at the LA Kings game on Thursday night. What's that about? Could something be brewing? That's coming up after these words. With life moving so fast, don't you wish you could just freeze time? Well, that's what Jim K. Ford is doing for you, because right now, when you custom order a new 2023 Ford F-150 from Jim K., you can lock in your factory order bonus of up to $3,500. And if there's a better incentive when you take delivery, you can choose that instead. It's that simple. Start your journey today at Jim K. Ford in Orleans or jimkford.com. Did you know Ottawa's very own Dunrobin Distilleries has been winning prestigious awards internationally for their spirits? It's true. Their gins won gold and silver last year out of the UK, and their whiskey came in second place as the best Canadian whiskey in the country. I believe that because it is my favorite. It's very cool that it's right here in our backyard. Dunrobin Spirits are available at various LCBO locations across the province or buy directly from their website, dunrobindistilleries.com. Senator GM Pierre Dorion at the LA Kings game on Thursday night, scouting out the action. Could we be seeing a scenario where he might be dogging the top four defensemen, trying to track him down finally? Because the LA Kings do have a good chunk of right shot defensemen there. I don't know that I see any Norris Trophy winners in the bunch beyond Drew Doughty. But right now, the Sens, they've finished up in Pittsburgh and they've completed their series for the season against both the Kings and the Dallas Stars. So he's there for a very particular reason, not necessarily, you know, pre-scouting for a King game or a Star game coming up. What do you think is happening there?
Yeah, you gotta think he's down there looking at somebody. Somebody's caught his interest in trade talks. I honestly don't know who. I don't know that I've heard any rumors involving LA King defensemen, either that LA is interested in moving or that somebody that Ottawa is interested in. I haven't heard anything. Have you, you heard anything or got any theories on this?
Well, I did hear Dave Poulin talking, on the radio about, Sean Durzi as a name, and, that is a right shot defenseman. I do remember being impressed by him in a game against the Sens. It's a little like the Jacob Chychrun effect. I don't watch many LA King games. I don't watch a lot of Western Conference hockey, period, particularly the ones that are out in that time zone. So I don't have a lot of background on Durzi, but I do know that I liked his game. They've also got another right shot defenseman in Matt Roy. Also, Sean Walker is a right shot defenseman. So I guess the smart money would be on one of those three guys. You need a right shot defenseman. There's three right shot defensemen that might be available.
Yeah, I out of those three, I gotta, is it Durzi? I mean, he's the best one of those three, I would think. He's in the right age range at 25, or is he 24? He was a Leaf draft pick, was he not? I thought he was traded to LA by the Leafs, yeah.
Yes, he was.
It was at the Simmons deal? I don't even know which trade it was, but anyway. Ontario kid, 24, 25 years old, decent stat line, not making a huge chunk of change. He's probably under $2 million. Looks okay. Looks all right. Right shot, right D. He's probably better than Travis Hamonic, I would hope. So maybe that's the guy they're looking at. But I can't help thinking that whatever it is now, it's not going to be a big splash. It's probably just going to be an upgrade type thing. It's not going to be a long-term, oh, this guy's a superstar, or this guy's a young kid who's going to become a superstar. I think it's just going to be another placeholder.
The Leafs traded in 2019 Sean Durzi along with Carl Grundstrom and a first rounder in the deal to acquire Jake Muzzin back in January of 2019. Okay. And the headline I'm reading right now, and it's one of those Leaf blogs, is Sean Durzi definitely one that got away. Hmm. So anytime you hear a former fan base talking about a player that glowingly would suggest that he's been a pretty good player for the LA Kings. And yeah, we'll see how that goes. But definitely noteworthy when the GM, not one of the pro scouts, the GM himself is at the LA Kings game on Thursday night. All right, moving on. Tim Stützle, Greg, has 42 points in 40 games. That includes 20 goals. He's exactly the kind of high-skill young player that you'd love to showcase at an NHL All-Star game. And certainly Sens fans did their part on social media, cramming the online ballot box via Twitter, but wasn't enough, though. Stutzla gets beaten out in the fan vote by Austin Matthews and David Pastrnak. You've got two from the Bruins, Ullmark and Pastrnak. You got Tage Thompson in Buffalo, Dylan Larkin in Detroit, Matthew Tkachuk in Florida, Nick Suzuki in Montreal, Brady Tkachuk for the Sens, Nikita Kucherov and Andrei Vasilevsky for the Lightning.
So you knew going in that one of them had to be a goalie. You got to have two goalies on the team. So really you're down to two slots. Are you taking the guy that scored 60 goals last year and Hart Trophy winner and all that, plus David Pastrnak, who, let's face it, probably deserves to be there? So Stutzla was in a tough race to begin with, not to mention you play for the Ottawa Senators, and it is a full worldwide write-in vote campaign. So that kind of, you know, we needed all of Germany to get on board, I guess.
Yeah. Finishing the list, it was Mitch Marner and the aforementioned Austin Matthews. So that's the full Atlantic Division squad. And you're right. It's not like you look up and down that Atlantic Division roster and say, what's Parker Kelly doing there? And not Tim Stutzla. Like, these are all true all-stars. There's nobody I really would quibble with. Tim Stutzla, it's unfortunate because he's so, I think to me, he is so close to where Brady Tkachuk is. And the reality is he's going to get his opportunity. It's, you know, this time next year, I'm pretty sure there's a good chance that it will be Stutzla. We'll see how it goes. But if he continues on the trajectory he's on, doing everything right and becoming a better two-way player as we go and becoming just more comfortable with everything. It's like you can see it game by game, can't you, with Tim Stutzla and his emergence. There's almost an eruption this year of progress. We know he's got the puck skill and we know he's got the speed, but he feels himself out a lot better. He's taking fewer hits. He's more aware of what's going on around him, just getting used to the pace and looking every bit like an all-star. He would not be out of place at this year's all-star game, but he's going to go to a lot of them in his career.
Yeah, it's been cool to watch. Like, we've had an opportunity to watch the maturation of this player from an 18-year-old to what he is today. I mean, he was playing 3v5 the other night, two men short, and you've got Tim Stutzla on the ice. Like, you never would have had that 2 years ago. You know, he's just growing and getting better and better. And as you say, the biggest thing is his awareness on the ice. He's so much smarter. Like this, he was always smart, but it's one thing to be able to size up what's going on and figure out what's going to happen. And it's another thing to get there, right? To be in the right place at the right time after you figure out what's going on. And that's a development process as well. Your hockey sense grows, your reaction time gets better. So the more time you spend in the league, the more time you're exposed to certain situations, you eventually figure out what the solution is or what you should have done, and eventually become second nature. And that's what you're seeing with this guy. He reads plays very well. He's a very, very smart hockey player. You add that with the speed, the puck skills, the shot, everything. Yeah, he will be an all-star someday and for a long time in this league.
Certainly, development is not an overnight thing. It's a gradual, progressive thing. But if you were ever to have one moment in a game that could really buoy your confidence, I'm thinking about that moment in the Wednesday night game when Stutzla's got the puck, Sidney Crosby's on him, Stutzla's up near the point, and he just dances around Sidney Crosby like he's not even there, steps into the slot, and absolutely rips one home. I mean, again, development is a long process, but in terms of if you're just measuring out one moment that could really spark a little extra to the confidence, how about that one?
Yeah, like what a beauty. Like the least skilled player would have just tried to fire a shot and hit Crosby in his shin pads. A slightly better skilled player would have tried to move one way or the other and fire it around Sidney Crosby, but Crosby could move and just block that too. A player of Stutzla's skill level faked one way, faked the other way, faked the first way again, then went the other way. He basically did a couple different juking and jiving there. He looked like a running back approaching a linebacker in open field, you know, just found a shooting lane, found a way to get the puck in a lane that wasn't going to be blocked by Crosby and just walked right around. I mean, it was gorgeous. It was beautiful. And you're right. That shows the development of a hockey player in one nanosecond of play.
I think of my 21-year-old self, I would be home watching that highlight for a while. I don't care how much money I'm poised to make, an $8 million a year contract kicking in next year, but I would sure get a kick out of that. And made Sidney Crosby actually look kind of slow on that play. Sidney Crosby is in his mid-30s now. He ain't slow. He's still a hell of a hockey player, and somehow, someway, Tim Stützle made him look like he had his feet in concrete. And I thought it was neat, though, Greg, that when you go back and you think of the many times that Sens fans had to be subjected to the Sidney Crosby replay of playing keep away with Jason Spezza, that's a nice little sweet bit of revenge for Sens fans, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He Crosby Spezza'd. He got Crosby Spezza'd. The Stutzless Crosby is now going to overtake the Crosby Spezza highlight. Well, we don't know about that one, but yeah, I thought of that exact thing at the time I was watching it too.
Yeah, this is the 2010. Was it the play? I think it was the playoffs, wasn't it? 2010. Yeah. And I always thought that Jason Spezza got a bad rap for that. For those who didn't see the highlight or didn't see the play, you had Sidney Crosby basically behind the Ottawa net going back and forth and back and forth with Spezza on his back the entire time. To me, Spezza was doing exactly what he should. Like, it happened for a long time. Crosby's one of the best players we've ever seen along the boards protecting the puck. But Spezza never lost his man. And then finally, it just came down to he made a pass back to the point, and I think it was Letang who hammered home a shot for a goal. But Spezza, I thought, did a pretty decent job against the best player in the game.
Yeah, he perfect. I said this at the time, and I'll stick by it to this day. Maintained his body position between his man and the net, had good stick position. A gap was good. I mean, the only thing that maybe you would have liked to have seen him do was eventually take one step towards Crosby, right? That's to finish it. But he was in perfect position the whole time, preventing a pass, preventing a walkout, and eventually it was a bit of a lucky play, really, the pass that got back to the point. It was more he was kind of throwing it in the general direction of the point off his backhand, and it banked right to Letang, and the shot should have never gone in. So if there was no goal, I don't know that we'd be seeing it quite as often as we have, because Spezza did play it right.
Yeah, he just had it for so long. I guess if you had one criticism, here we are breaking down 12-year-old highlights. Anyway, if you had one criticism, at some point you clean that guy out. You press up against him. Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to ask you, before we got too much away from the All-Star game, what do you think of the uniforms? They seem like a nod to the 1990s. What I think about when I see these uniforms, and it's the kind of one that has the star effect on the shoulders. It reminds me of the Owen Nolan goal on Dominic Hasek, which I guess takes us back to the 1990s.
I don't know, Steve. I like the old ones. You know, like picture Bobby Orr in the 70s wearing the All-Star jersey. They incorporated the white, and basically they were white and black and gold. And then the NHL, the crest, the logo of the NHL was black and orange and white. Mm-hmm. And through the 80s, we had the Whales and the Campbells wearing orange jerseys or white or black. And they were always orange, white, black, no other colors. Now they've gotten all funky on us. And I don't know why. And you know what? When it comes right down to it, there's a part of me that really doesn't care.
You know, right.
Just, yeah. I'm going to watch the game because I'm going to watch the game. I only care about, I don't really care about the game, but I care about seeing the players in the game, and you know what they're wearing isn't all that important. So I guess somebody in the marketing department felt it was important to put a light blue on the bottom of the whites and to have a pink piping throughout the jersey. Somebody somewhere decided that this was the way to go. Maybe to help sell the game, whatever the reasoning is, I really don't care. Just, you know, let's play the game and watch, you know?
Yeah, it is the All-Star game at the end of the day. I think there's more discussion and interest in who makes the game than the actual game, and certainly nobody cares about the result. I don't know if I'll watch the All-Star game or not, so I can't get too fired up. I mean, if you ask me what I think of them, I think it's a neat, nostalgic nod to the 90s. But the color choices in it are horrific, in my opinion. Like they're ugly. You know, you got powder blue and white, as you mentioned, but then there's this pink and black striping throughout. I'm not sure I get that, but okay, that's fine. Fill your boots. I don't care if you wear, honey mustard velvet colored uniforms. It really doesn't matter to me. Moving on, though. Ryan Miller. Yeah. In the news today, it was Ryan Miller night in Buffalo as the Sabres honored their great goaltender. Now, he's not in the Hall of Fame. He wouldn't be eligible yet, would he?
No.
No. So I think he's, what do you think? Is he in all, is no. he going to the, is he a Hall of Famer? Not a Hall of Famer?
Not a Hall of Famer.
Really?
No. Okay. No. Come on.
Certainly had a tremendous career.
There's one Buffalo goalie who should be in there ahead of him who's not there yet, and Tom Barrasso. I mean, you could even make an argument that Mike Vernon deserves to be there over Ryan Miller. What about Cujo? There's all kinds of goalies that have been passed over in the years. Great career, put up some really nice numbers in Buffalo. Was very, very good for Buffalo for a long time, and then married a California girl. I think she was an actress, and yep. immediately wanted to go to the West Coast. And I got to get out of here. And didn't they trade him to like St. Louis for 2 days or something? I think he went somewhere else first, and then
the Ducks, I think
he ended up signing with the Ducks, and the rest is, finished out his career there in Anaheim. Good career and obviously long time. It would be like the Senators honoring Craig Anderson, long time member of the team who was there for the good years and put up some decent stats and gets a night, but he's not a Hall of Famer in my books.
Certainly, everybody remembers 2010, the golden goal, Sidney Crosby. Ryan Miller was in goal for that one. Not a particularly good goal when you look at it. It was amazing for Canadian hockey fans. We all freaked out. Not a great goal, though, in my opinion. Bad angle. And the same was true of the other great moment. As far as Sens fans go, nobody who was watching will ever forget Daniel Offerson's goal in the 2007 Eastern Conference Final on Ryan Miller.
With this top line of Ottawa coming after them. Albertson in again. Nearly got in. Scores! Albertson scores, and the series is over. And the Ottawa Senators are going on to the Stanley Cup championship by that shot by the hot guy, the captain of the Ottawa Senators. He went in by himself, looked down at the goalie, and wristed that low shot, and the series is over.
Well, it was a perfect shot and not a very hard one, but just inside the post, right along the ice, and Albertson, who has grabbed this team by the throat since the playoffs started, gets them into the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in modern Ottawa Senator history.
And that call courtesy of CBC, the great Bob Cole. Interesting that he's referencing Daniel Offerson as the hot guy. The hot guy. Okay.
He had a great game.
Game.
Both goals, you bring up the other one that, of course, we're not allowed to play. But both goals, probably a little too deep in your net there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was not real good. It was on the Alfie goal, he was quite badly screened by his defenseman on the play. But, neither goal will go down in his personal highlight reel. And he's bouncing his grandkids on his knee one day. He's probably not going to show those two goals. But he certainly was. He's a throwback to another time when the Sens really did have a pretty good rivalry with the Buffalo Sabres. Like, they faced them a lot. And I think Miller was, he was the goaltender for a number of them. I think the first one when the Sens had their first playoff series ever in 97, that was the one where they lost in game 7. And Dominik Hasek, was not available to Buffalo. Shocker there. We all saw that again in 2006 here in Ottawa. So it was a guy named Steve Shields that won the day for the Sabres that year. But I think everything after that was Ryan Miller of the four playoff series the Sens and the Sabres had.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here laughing. I'm thinking, we just played two Ryan Miller highlights. I don't think those two were used in Buffalo on the big screen on Ryan Miller night there on Thursday night.
No, I don't think so. And the Olympic one, man, the Olympics are very protective, so... I don't mess around with the Olympics.
Yeah, sorry. We played one clip. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If the Olympics are on, or even if they're not on, you play a clip from the Olympics, all of a sudden, you've got a note within about 10 minutes or an email from the International Olympic Committee saying, what are you doing? How dare you? Anyway, so Ryan Miller, honored by the Buffalo Sabres, is number 30, retired, inducted into their Hall of Fame on Ryan Miller night on Thursday. So that was kind of cool. All right, moving on. I want to talk to you about reverse hits. Something that's been around for a long time in the NHL. That moment where you're going back for a puck, there's a forechecker right on you, and instead of picking up the puck and continuing your pace, you throw the brakes on and you reverse hit the guy who's coming after you. You basically just stop short, like Frank Costanza in Seinfeld.
You stop short? You think I don't know what that's about?
And then you lay a shoulder into the guy and usually completely catch him off guard and wipe him out. And that happened on Thursday night as the Habs were taking on the Florida Panthers. This was a bad one. Mike Matheson retrieving a puck in his own zone as he's sitting there in the corner. Matheson hustling back to get it, and about, I don't know, he's at least 5-6 feet shy of the puck, puts the brakes on totally, and crushes Eric Staal. And Staal for a moment was Bambi legs. And certainly Florida fans were not happy with the hit. I threw it up as our Dunrobin Distillery's web pool, and a lot of people thought, interference all day long, that's a cheap shot, that's gutless. What do you think of those hits in general? That's an extreme example, obviously, but you also see more subtle ones. Is that a fair thing? Is that something the NHL should look at, getting reverse hits out of the game?
Well, this is something that started more from a puck protection standpoint. Some guys along the wall protecting the puck and somebody's coming in to hit them. And it really didn't start as a reverse hit. It started more as a brace yourself and be ready for the guy to come hit you. Kind of, sort of, from behind, and it progressed from there into the push myself off the boards and knock you down before you come and hit me. But in any case like that, I'm playing the puck, and I'm fair game for you to come hit me, and you're sort of fair game for me to hit you. You're within a foot of me. But in these cases, this is no different than two guys chasing an icing, and I hook you 5 feet before we get there. I'm going to get called for interference or for hooking.
Right. Like,
it's clearly interference. I mean, I played the body on you when you didn't have the puck. And not only did you not have the puck, you're 5 feet away from the puck, and I don't even have the puck. Nobody's got a puck. Two guys going in a puck, and I stop and knock you on your butt. Yeah, I don't want to call it. Somebody said, what, cheap shot was one of the comments we got on the poll, or gutless. I don't think it's either of those things, but it's clearly interference in my mind.
All right, good discussion. Time for us to stop short. When we come back on the show, we're going to dabble a little bit in our coaching background in minor hockey and answer the question, what is the number one job of a minor hockey coach? That's coming up after these words.
Reignite your passion for driving at Jim K. Ford. Check out all the latest innovations in the hottest vehicles like the Ford Bronco, Mustang, Maverick, F-150, and more. And for your comfort, if you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle, Jim K. Ford will absolutely say yes to bringing a vehicle to your home or place of work for a demonstration and test drive. Jim K. Ford in Orleans or JimKFord.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
We call you the coach because you coach a lot of hockey, and I've dabbled in it myself. So we wanted to talk a little bit about this. I found this online. I know there's lots of people getting ready for minor hockey probably right now as they're listening. The quote came from Jeff Brown, who used to be the Ottawa 67's head coach, Ottawa guy, great NHL career himself. And it was from a seminar a couple of years ago, and it was actually a really good read. But the thing that grabbed me, and I wondered if this should not be, in your opinion, job one if you're a minor hockey coach. Actually, I'll throw this in. I think my job one was always making sure that the player is excited to come back next year.
Thank you.
That's number one for me. But beyond that, your job as a minor hockey coach, first and foremost, is to develop individual skill, period. What do you think of that, given that there are a number of minor hockey coaches who are heading to the rink right now, armed to the hilt with tactics that only involve systems?
Yeah, there's a time where systems come into play, and not only a time as in an age, but also a level. There are certain levels where you might never need to do anything tactically, strategically to teach your players. Like, let's face it, if I'm a career house leaguer, it's not till peewee maybe when I might start worrying about, maybe you could try to play your position a little better. But you still need the skills to be able to execute the tactics, and therefore skills is number one. You've got to be able to skate, shoot, pass, stick handle, and check, the basic technical skills of the game. And that should be the number one priority. Well, sorry, to me, it's number two, because as you just alluded to, I agree with you. Number one is to make sure these kids are having fun on the ice and they want to come back not only next season, but next week. You know, your number one goal every year is to make sure that my players are still playing again next year and having a good time while they're here this year. So yeah, skill development should be first and foremost in my book, but that doesn't mean you don't ever do tactics. It's just a time and a place and figuring out what that time and place is based on your group, their ages, their skill level, their maturity level, their hockey sense level. There's all sorts of factors that go into the determining when and where you start doing that stuff. But yeah, skills and Technical skills is first and foremost. Couldn't agree more.
You want to be organized, obviously, and systems are important. You know, but at the same time, you don't need to waste ice time or as much of it as a lot of coaches do. I've seen 60 minutes or 50 minutes where practices are devoted entirely to the choreography of a good forecheck, all that. That helps you win. But I think that it's ironic because coaches who spend too much time on their systems, they might win early in the season, but they're not going to improve a ton over the course of the season. I think the team that focused on individual skill will probably make the greatest strides over the course of the minor hockey season. What do you think?
I would agree with you. And not only a season, but a quote-unquote career of your players.
Right.
Like, yeah, okay, I'd like to have my team execute a forecheck. I'd like to have my team play D-zone coverage. I'd like to have special teams, whatever. But all of those things require technical skills. If you can't skate and shoot and pass, then any power play work I do with you is going to be useless. If you can't angle, if you can't properly defend a one-on-one from the corner, check, anything like that, then you can't execute D-zone coverage. So it's right. Teach the base, the foundation of any system is the individual technical skills. And if you don't have them or don't teach them, you're not going to be able to do the top of the pyramid and get to the tactics.
Yeah. Another thing that I'm pleased about just on you know, job one as a minor hockey coach is making sure that the kid's having fun and wants to return next year. One of the things that I really love is that there's, I don't know, there's 8, maybe 10 girls that I coached mm-hmm. that are now playing women's hockey at Sensplex right now. You know, they're in their early 20s now. And they, you know, loving the game beyond
awesome
being 18 years old, right? Okay, junior hockey didn't come calling for you. Oh, well, that doesn't mean you can't love the game your entire life. And if you loved it as a kid, there's no reason why you can't love it as an adult. And unfortunately, some kids get out of it and they can't wait to get out of it. Thank God that's over. Dad was pushing me pretty hard, or coach was pushing me pretty hard. I stopped liking that after a while. I love to see that. You know, where kids graduate into adult hockey and continue to enjoy it, because there's obviously lots of beer league hockey that can be, you know, fantastic level, like really elite hockey to, you know, almost beginner level stuff. It's all out there. And I just love that passion for hockey can continue on beyond being a kid.
Well said. Agree.
Now, let's close it out today.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a little trivia here. And you've got you're the quiz master today. You're the man today.
I'm ready.
The Kodiak Security Systems trivia for today. And you've got our Sens question that our good listeners can follow along with. Hit me with it.
Well, I don't know how easy or difficult this is, Steve. I never know, to be honest with you. I can never tell whether, you know, is Steve going to get this? Does he know this? Anyway, the Ottawa Senators have played a grand total of 2,321 games in their history. Did you know that?
Okay.
2,321. Yeah, there you go. I want to know, we can ask all kinds of questions off this, but for starters, which team have they played the most regular season games? Who have they played the most regular season games against? Do you know that?
It would be somebody that's always been in their division, I would think. So we go back to the early days when they were in the Adams division. I'm going to say, I don't know, Montreal?
It is. The Montreal Canadiens. 75 times they played the Montreal Canadiens. Sorry, 161 times they've played the Montreal Canadiens. I just ruined my second question, which was, which team would they beat the most?
Right, yeah, right. I got to think the other, like I think about those Adams division teams. Again, they were in the Adams to start out in 1992-93, and then some of those Adams teams stayed with the Sens as we moved along. Obviously, teams like Quebec and Hartford, they're gone.
Yeah.
But Buffalo or Boston, you know, they've been in their division all the way along. So I would imagine that teams like Buffalo and Boston would be pretty close to Montreal.
It's 161 Montreal, 151 Boston, and 151 Buffalo, 137 Toronto. Because remember, Toronto wasn't in their division to begin with.
That's right.
Over after the fact. But here's something else that I found here. There's 31 teams. How many teams do you think they have a better than 500 record against?
31 opponents. I would say it's less than the average. I'm going to say 12.
Believe it or not, it's 16. They're one team above 500. They got a better record, a better than 500 record against 16 and a less than 500 record against 15. So they're in overall out of the 31, they're one game over 500, one team over 500.
Well, so the first four years were so putrid, right? I mean, it's not like Seattle and Vegas where they were really good out of the gate. Seattle, not so much in their first year, but they're good now. And Vegas has been good all the way along. So Ottawa, on the other hand, they weren't an expansion team for 1 year. They're effectively an expansion team for four.
Yeah.
So,
Vegas, of course, their worst record is Vegas. They are 1-7, 1-7-0-2 against Vegas for a whopping 200 winning percentage.
Ooh. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's close it out there, Greg. And obviously, great weekend for NFL fans. As I said off the top, I will be on the couch covered in, I'm going to say party mix. I'm in a party mix kind of mood. I'll be covered in party mix crumbs and watching all the NFL divisional round action we've got coming up today. It's going to be the Jaguars and the Chiefs and the Giants and the Eagles, 4:30 and 8:15. And then tomorrow, Bengals, Bills, Cowboys, 49ers. Have you made any decisions on who you think is going to win the Super Bowl?
You know what? I think Buffalo's going to be there. I just think it's kind of cool here. You've got a historic game in Dallas and San Francisco. KC is nowhere near what they used to be. That's going to be interesting to watch to see how it's the Jags, right? To see how that comes out.
It is.
I think Buffalo's got destiny on their side. The Ofer group is going to come through this year, I think, anyway. That's my pick.
Yeah, I think if you only have one day, we all have obligations and to-do lists and things like that on the weekend, and if you can only watch one day's worth, tomorrow would be the one I'd advise. I think you got two amazing games versus today's games that are, I think there are no doubters in my opinion. I think the Chiefs will handle the Jaguars. I think the Eagles will handle the Giants. But tomorrow's games look really competitive, especially Cincinnati at Buffalo. That's going to be probably the best of the four. I'm really looking forward to that with two amazing young quarterbacks in Joe Burrow and Josh Allen. Anyway, enjoy the NFL weekend. Enjoy the Sens action this weekend, and we shall call it quits there. Again, I want to remind everybody that our website is SensNationHockey.com. That's where the Sens Nation podcast lives, hosted by myself and Greg Kennedy. Have a great weekend, everybody. You as well, Greg, and we shall talk to you next week.
For sure. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at SensNationHockey.com.